Welcome to the 3 Men in a Retrospectives look at the Incredible Hulk series.
How long has it been since you felt real pain?
Part of Percolated Media's full Marvel podcast series.
It's a wonderful plan, isn't it?
Join Matt.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Adam.
You look like a massive nerd, even around other scientists.
And Garrett.
The third was some giant, if I can believe the descriptions.
As they look at various film iterations of the Incredible Hulk character.
I hate them.
Wait, I just got here. Who do we hate?
From Bill Bixby to Eric Bana.
You could always close out the world when you wanted to.
The three co-hosts will review 4 Hulk TV movies, as well as the 2003 Ang Lee-directed film.
No one can take that kind of punishment.
So prepare to Hulk yourselves out, podcast listeners. The Percolated Media Incredible Hulk Retrospective begins now.
In each of us, there lives a kind of beast made of rage. Years ago, I used science to study this beast, to bring him out of me. I used gamma radiation to release him, but I used too much.
The Incredible Hulk ... pilot episode/movie. Air date was November 4th, 1977, and this was directed by Kenneth Johnson. Well, the case of the completionist, the incredible completionist, strikes again, which explains why we are A, covering this first of all, but B, I guess this is appropriate once again because we've done 4 or 5 different Marvel characters at this point, and we're still not hitting typical superheroes.
We sure aren't. Although I will say, this is probably my 3rd favorite superhero behind Superman and Spider-Man. I grew up loving Hulk, mostly due to this TV show, which we'll discuss. This was a huge part of my childhood. Me and my father would sit and watch this show, and this pilot got everything going. Look, it aired 2 days after I was born, so it's not like I watched it live, but I eventually caught up to it, and now I have all the DVD sets, so this was a big part of my childhood, and I love The Incredible Hulk. This TV show got me into Incredible Hulk comic.
Well, the other positive I will say as we get into this is that we've gotten at least progressively more recognizable names to the general population. The Hulk is far and away the most recognizable character to the general populace. Even if you remove the MCU brand, people knew who the Hulk was long before he joined Marvel proper. So at least we're getting progressively more populist entertainment compared to Man-Thing and Howard the Duck, certainly.
Yep. This Bill Bixby show, yeah, was a part of that, and Wonder Woman as well. All of them ran that gamut. And yeah, superheroes were around before Batman, although definitely not as prevalent.
And technically, this predates Donner Superman as well, a year before, which that certainly changed the landscape for superheroes on film. But we'll talk a little bit about superheroes on TV before we get into this. But Adam, you know, you're a comic book guy, much like I am, and Garrett is to the certainly the least degree of the three of us. Is the Hulk a character you've ever given a shit about?
Yeah, because that's where Wolverine first debuted. So that's kind of why, you know. No, he wasn't one that I read unless he was included in other comics. Going up against Spider-Man, going up against Punisher, which is weird because I don't like either one of them independently. Going up against Wolverine. So as an antagonist was about the only time that I cared and read The Incredible Hulk or Hulk or add superlative here. He wasn't a character that I read, wasn't a character that I reached out for. I know his popularity and that name recognition was substantial for Marvel. Like, they kept going back to that Hulk well, but he wasn't one that I generally, and even to this day, really care about. I love that he was supposed to be the villain in the first Avengers film before they got Cold Feet. So Hulk has just always been an also-ran character when it comes to my comic lore and love.
Well, before I get to my experience with this character, the Hulk, in a lot of ways, in the same way that Punisher is not a superhero, neither is the Hulk, but speaking of connective tissue, the Hulk is a character like Man-Thing, where he is a horror movie protagonist or antagonist that you follow as the principal character. Because if Man-Thing is the, much like Werewolf by Night, if he's the Wolfman, the Incredible Hulk is Jekyll and Hyde, which is literally what Stan Lee was looking for. And of course, this is the first of these heroes that we have to thank Stan Lee for in this retrospective. Because characters like Howard the Duck, Man-Thing, Doctor Strange a little bit, but the Hulk was, no pun intended, the brainchild of Stan Lee. One of his earlier ones, because he predates Spider-Man technically. As far as myself as a comic book fan, there was a long period where I had no interest in reading Hulk comics. Not that I thought he was a bad character, but I found very little as far as progression with the character. For a long time, I just felt like he was stuck in a rut and he was very limited with what he could do from my perspective, where it's just a guy who gets mad and beats the crap out of monsters. I felt like there wasn't much evolution in that. But in the same way that Garth Ennis, when he wrote Punisher, made me like that character, when Peter David wrote the Hulk, I think he kind of made me gain new admiration for the character, because he was the one who finally, along with a couple others, but he was the most prominent when it came to dissecting the Hulk's psychology and coming up with different versions, because he came up with Grey Hulk, and he was really the one who separated Bruce Banner and the Hulk as like id, ego, superego. And it was the first time I really cared about the character. And much like Adam, the only times I read him outside of that were when he showed up with the Avengers, or World War Hulk I got into because I liked the Illuminati comic. And we'll talk about Planet Hulk, I guess, when we get to Ragnarok, although there's very little that was carried over outside of just the basic premise. But before we get to brass tacks, we should also mention that this part of the retro will end with the Ang Lee movie.
Yeah.
Not to say that we won't review The Incredible Hulk, we will, but we're saving that for the Marvel Cinematic Universe portion proper, which is also the same logic we're going to use for Captain America a little bit down the road. So I did just want to be up front and let people know. We will talk about that movie, but there is no shortage to talk about, because it's not just this pilot. There were multiple TV movies, and there is the Ang Lee movie that will cap off this conclusion. If you are a fan of Hulk Smash, we hope that this part of the retrospective will satisfy you.
Yeah, this might be the part of the retrospective I've been looking forward to the most, is to talk about Hulk, because of how big of a part it did play in my childhood. Not as big as Superman. I mean, I didn't have Incredible Hulk pajamas like I had with Superman, and I didn't run around pretending to smash things like I did when I had a red blanket and was running around pretending to fly. But the Incredible Hulk, just the whole notion of it, and the way, as you mentioned, Matt, the Jekyll and Hyde aspect of Hulk is what I really loved as a kid. Well, you know, we'll talk about casting Lou Ferrigno. I mean, just seeing that transformation every week, looking forward to that every week, was a big part of the draw for me as well. So yeah, this was a pretty big staple for me.
Now, let me also be upfront and say my exposure to this show, much like Banner being exposed to gamma radiation, these movies are the only association I have with the television show. I've never sat down and binged it. So this is my only knowledge. So I'm glad that we have Garrett here to kind of guide us through it. But Adam, you know, you're comparable age to Garrett. Do you have any experience with the Bill Bixby show?
I do, by just, it was on, and it was one of those shows that ran. But when I would get up in the morning to walk to school, because I was walking to school at first grade, it was, I don't have any issues. It was one of those TV shows that was on when you'd get up early in the morning, eat my cereal, and turn on the TV. So I knew it. I've seen some of the episodes. Obviously, I'm very familiar with the ending credit. So yeah, it was always there. I can't say I religiously watched it. I've seen some episodes with my dad. I've not seen any of the movies that, you know, the pilot that kicks this off, nor the, God, what is there, four that come back afterwards, after the series ended?
Yeah, if you include this pilot, there's four total.
Okay. So I've never seen any of the quote-unquote TV movies of this, but I know the series. And as a kid growing up in the early 80s, you know, that was born in the very late 70s, way after Garrett, of course I was aware of it. But for me and my household, and I think I got to blame my dad for this, like I do so many 70s women, going back to Adrienne Barbeau, we were a Wonder Woman house. So same year, but, you know, Hulk was there, but it wasn't a religious watch.
Well, speaking of Wonder Woman, this is kind of the equivalent of what Wonder Woman was for DC. The Hulk was for Marvel, not just as far as runway, as far as recognition. In the same way that Linda Carter was Wonder Woman for what, close to 40 years until Gal Gadot brought it to the big screen. Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno, more so Ferrigno, were the people that were associated with the Hulk almost exclusively. And both came out at the similar time. You know, Wonder Woman started a little bit earlier, but they ran almost simultaneously.
Yeah, and back then, there wasn't a huge thing amongst people watching the shows that, oh, this is DC and this is a Marvel character. To us, it was all, they were comic book characters. It's based on a comic. Wow. And I didn't, as a kid, I didn't really associate Hulk with Marvel, although I saw the logo every time I got a comic book, or Wonder Woman with DC, which I didn't read until much later. So the whole thing of it being a superhero was amplified when Superman came out the year after. And that was when the aspect of being a superhero on the big or little screen really took hold. But the thing about this series is, I have a little story about this. So I went to a con that Lou Ferrigno was at, and I brought my season one box set to have him sign. Me and my friend were on our way up, and my friend brought out his fucking phone to take a picture. Lou Ferrigno lost his shit and pretty much kicked us off his table, because you cannot take a picture of him unless you pay for it in his booth. And I was not allowed to have my thing signed. I was not allowed to have any of that done because Lou Ferrigno hulked out on us and kicked us off his fucking table.
Speaking of funny stories, you have to trace superheroes on television, at least with live action, to Adam West and Batman.
Yes.
That's what gave television studios the confidence to say, oh, we can make this work. Because you had animation, if you were going to do it, was the avenue. DC had a Shazam, Captain Marvel show. You had, you know, the Max Fleischer Superman, which some of those premiered in theaters. But that's how you did it, just because of technology and things like that, which is why the Adam West Batman was tremendously popular, as we talked about many years ago. But the Hulk, just by his very appearance, kind of hard to make people believe that, all things considered, when you're comparing it to television. But you had Universal, which is known today as NBC Universal. They went to Kenneth Johnson, who was a producer and a writer. They had licensed a lot of characters from Marvel's library. And Johnson turned this down initially, but he took influence from Jekyll and Hyde, as Stan Lee did. And he also read Les Miserables, which he took elements from. And much like a lot of the adaptations that we'll talk about, they were not afraid to make substantial changes compared to the comic book. Like, this is not a literal translation at all. In fact, a lot of his origin, I mean, right down to his name, it's different. But they got the confidence to do this, like I said. And this show ran for 5 years, you know, multiple TV movies. But it came down to, who do we get? Let's start with the Hulk himself.
Well, before you get that, we have to mention that we have covered Kenneth Johnson in the past, the three of us. He did Steel with good old Shaq. That was his. So this is not the first time we have covered him on the 3 Men in Retrospective podcast. And man, do we have good things to say about that.
I also do think it's important to look at, you know, and Matt hit a good part of it there. There was three networks when this was done. So it's not like, you know, they put this on because there was 20 networks and they needed to fill time and slots. Fox didn't even exist yet. There was ABC, there was CBS, and there was WNBC. Mm-hmm. That was it. So for this to run as long as it did, regardless of our thought, that is one bleep of an accomplishment for a superhero, quote unquote, you know, but a comic property, that's just nuts.
And in the same way that, you know, Adam West Batman was the thought in popular consciousness, when you say things like, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry, or that Lonely Man music, people immediately recognize where that's from. So absolutely, this show has left a legacy that is still being felt to this day. I mean, they end, we'll talk about this, the Ang Lee movie ends with that line. Mm-hmm. They use the line in the Super Bowl trailer. Mm-hmm. And that was the big screen movie a decade plus after the last TV movie. So, you know, the show is as important to Marvel in a lot of ways as Wonder Woman and Batman were for DC. And when you look at history being different, Arnold Schwarzenegger auditioned for the Hulk, technically. But they said he was not tall enough, according to Johnson in an interview. But he was also contracted to Conan the Barbarian years before the movie actually came out. That was in the works for a long time before it actually got made. And then they went to, speaking of successful segues, we just talked about Jaws not too long ago. The other Jaws, Richard Kiel, was hired to play the Hulk. But Johnson's kid said he wasn't buff enough and wasn't appropriate to be the Hulk. Certainly height-wise, you could believe it, but Kiel just didn't fit the bill, no pun intended. He had bond money, so he can't complain.
Yeah. Could you imagine telling Schwarzenegger that he's too small? At this point, you know, these two, if you go back to Pumping Iron, these two had a feud, a pretty big feud.
Epic.
Yeah. What's knowing these two lunkheads, they probably still do. No, because Schwarzenegger put his whole feud with Stallone behind him. I think he could do it with Ferrigno as well. But at this point, it looked like Ferrigno had won because Schwarzenegger's getting dubbed in Hercules in New York and these, you know, little small things while Ferrigno's on the big TV show on CBS. So I found it funny that in looking at this, that Schwarzenegger was auditioned for it and lost it to Lou.
I'm sure Schwarzenegger has let it go. Ferrigno, not so much. We will never know. But it is very much a Bret Hart Goldberg level of disdain from a certain point of view. And as you mentioned, Ferrigno was a professional bodybuilder like Schwarzenegger. Although there is one shot of Kiel that's in this pilot.
Is there
they
really?
They kept one shot.
Oh, wow.
It's when with the family at the lake or the pond or whatever that is.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And Kiel also said he had trouble with the contact lenses because he could only see out of one eye most of his life. And the makeup, because this is the 70s, not easy to get off. So he said, you know what, I'm not going to be that upset about not getting this role. And the other half, Bill Bixby, was the only person, he was the first person they wanted to play David Bruce Banner.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, that to me, it's just, you're changing shit just to change it.
Well, did you hear Ferrigno's reasoning for that? What he says was the reasoning that the network changed it?
Mm.
It's ridiculous. They said they thought Bruce sounded too gay.
We found Bruce was an effeminate name at the time.
Have these people never heard of Bruce Wayne?
What exactly?
Like, this is what happens sometimes when you have people who, I mean, perspectives change all the time and worldviews change, but God just...
Mm-hmm.
And Ferrigno even, apparently he said, because I'm looking at some of the notes, he said that was ridiculous that someone even said that.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently Johnson said his son is named David.
Yeah.
And Bruce just became his middle name because you see it in the tombstone at the end of this. So they at least kept that. And apparently, so when they got Bill Bixby and they were talking about, okay, how are we going to do this? Apparently Bixby and Ferrigno didn't talk much, like, at all. They intentionally kept themselves distant because they wanted that icy distinction between the two of them, you know, because we live in a time now where every actor who's, for the most part, when they, you know, Mark Ruffalo plays Bruce Banner and the Hulk. I mean, you had Ang Lee do the motion cap for that movie, but this is also different because you're having two actors play the same superhero, which I can't think of a lot of times where they've done that.
Bill Bixby, what an interesting bit of casting. I think it's a great bit of casting because here's a guy came from My Favorite Martian and The Courtship of Eddie's Father to pretty, let's just say, not as dark pieces of media. And he comes onto this show and the image of him transforming into Lou Ferrigno when I was a kid scared the shit out of me. The fact that this guy was such a nice guy, but if you made him angry, he turned into this big green monster was very scary. And I think that's due to just how affable Bill Bixby comes off on screen.
He feels like that TV father that you would have just seen. Mm-hmm. And I think that was part of the thing. I got to say, though, he always just felt old to me. I say that now being that he's probably younger in this show than I am now. But he just, I don't know, he feels old.
I think that's just also because of how people looked at the time.
Yeah, that's true.
Sean Connery was 31 when he started playing Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a period when once he started to fully lose his hair, he aged really quick. This show, the pilot did very well. I mean, it led to 5 seasons and multiple movies. The other thing they considered before we get into this is that they considered, long before this was actually a thing in the comics, of making the Hulk red.
Oh, this.
Yes. So the rationale was that red, because it's the color of anger, that's what the Hulk should be. And Stan Lee, who was not just a creator at Marvel, he was an executive, so he had say, said, you can't change it. Like, people know the Hulk because he's green. And granted, I think red is kind of easier to look at, certainly for me, than green. And as somewhat logical as that rationale is, I mean, these people should be working for DC because the green, the Lantern Corps got that right with the Red Lantern Corps. But God, just, could you imagine doing this? If they said nowadays, the Hulk's going to be red.
Oh, people would lose their shit.
And I'm not talking about the actual Red Hulk that we had in the comics for almost 20 years now, but like, if the internet existed back then and they announced that, there would be petitions, there would be change.org, there would be boycotts.
Yeah, look what happened 10 years later with Michael Keaton. They take their fucking comics serious. And look, I mean, people don't even realize that Hulk wasn't even originally supposed to be green. He was supposed to be gray.
Yeah, which ironically they used for one of his alter egos.
Yes.
Gray Hulk.
Uh-huh.
But seriousness, that's the last thing I want to talk about before we get into this pilot. Contrasting this, the Adam West Batman show, that was tongue-in-cheek. It was parody. It was comedy. Wonder Woman had dramatic elements, but it was a rousing superhero show, all things considered. You know, it was light. This was really the first time on television that they treated a superhero like weekly dramatic television.
Hmm. Yeah, it was going into it. It was strange for me to remember that this is definitely a weekly drama. It's not the comic-y, lighthearted feel. It's got some elements, but it is family drama time.
Yeah, and so many different times throughout the course of a season. The draw to Hulk, like I mentioned, was him changing. But the thing that was contrasting in watching the series, because I went through it again, it's probably been about 7-8 years I went through the entire series again, is at least 3-4 times a year, he was looking for a cure. And these TV movies, when we get to them, are all about finding a cure for this. But it was the draw of him changing is what kept people coming back. So I think in some ways, Kenneth Johnson kind of mangles his own vision. But that was what David Banner's mission was, in addition to saving people from their own way in the episodes that followed after this.
That seeking a cure is partially also why I did not care about reading Hulk comics, because mm-hmm. that was in a lot of runs. That's what he's trying to do. You know that, but that's Universal Monsters. That's the Wolfman. You could argue that's kind of Frankenstein. I mean, Frankenstein's an influence in this pilot with a particular scene, if you know the book and the James Whale movie. But you know, this was important to show that we can take this seriously and treat it with respect, but without making it too much of a contrast with the superhero elements. Because by definition, the Hulk is a superhero, but they also keep the thing of, and this is what I like about the Hulk. I like the Hulk best when he's scary.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been crazy about lovable Hulk for the longest of time. That's why I think it'll be very interesting when we get to the actual movies. But you know, like I said, I like when the Hulk is scary, because that pays to his horror roots.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, Bill Bixby passed in somewhere in the mid-90s. And Lou Ferrigno, you know, he's still so synonymous with the character. They gave him cameos in the actual movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he even voiced the Hulk in the Ed Norton one.
He did.
And, you know, I think this is also important when you're talking about the legacy of Marvel. A lot of their stuff around this time that they tried, like the Spider-Man TV show was a failure that they tried around this time. This showed that they could do it. It's just funny. It took Marvel a long time to get it right on live action. It wasn't really until the Netflix shows. That was DC's avenue, all things considered, until they lost their minds. And I can't believe the same studio that gave us the Adam West Batman all those years ago also made Gotham Knights. Holy shit, is that show bad.
I lasted half an episode.
One thing also worth mentioning is that if you want to watch this, apparently Amazon likes to fuck with us, because the rest of the show was available for the longest time until I decided to finally sit down and watch the pilot, which I had to pay for. The episodes were unavailable, but they were available
all there
for,
until the for next day. You and me both. Fuck.
And of course, like we had this with Scream that we announced they're doing it. They finally added it to Paramount Plus. But there's been a lot of retros where stuff either gets lost or was free for the longest of time and then gets taken off. It's just funny how this stuff works. I think that happened with Punisher.
Yeah. Keep physical media alive, people. Keep it alive.
And Gary is, because of course he sends us a picture of his entire collection just to rub it in.
Take notes today, because fuck streamers tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
So this pilot is not just the introduction for the show, it is also an origin story for this character, which was a lot of Marvel properties are going to be origin stories. Ironically, though, this is the first one that really is, because like Howard the Duck, he's already Howard the Duck. Dr. Mordred, he's already established. Man-Thing, I can't give any credit whatsoever, because he's already established. And it took the second Punisher movie for them to actually do the origin story, at least from pre-Punisher. You see it in the Lundgren film, but we open, at least the version I watched, with a quote: within each of us at times there dwells a mighty and raging fury. Yeah, especially me when I had to pay to watch this.
Yeah, the contrast here is very funny. The 70s TV was so funny because we go from this to like montage, and I know you're going to get into it, but wow, the tone in this is something to behold for sure.
It certainly is. And my knowledge of the Hulk as far as the ins and outs of his origin are next to zero. I don't know how much of this is authentic to his original run, but we find out that almost a year before the events of this pilot, his wife died in a car accident. And we're seeing that he's been having recurring dreams that always begin with, you know, happy memories. They might as well be at a picnic with a dog on a bright sunny day. And then it cuts to the aftermath of the car accident, and he's feeling guilt about leaving his wife in the burning car. I don't know if this is true to the Hulk, but I think this is a cool addition that I've never thought of before.
Yeah, this is not from the comics. This is very different. But you know what? You got to put yourself in the mind of somebody doing a television pilot. And to do a television pilot, you need to create drama that lasts throughout an entire run. And this whole guilt of him not being able to save his wife in this burning car is what drives Bill Bixby's David Banner, Bruce Banner, to be who he is throughout the entire show. Now, some people would say, well, where's the resolution? The resolution is going to be had through 5 seasons of the TV show. This is setting that up. And I think this was a good choice by Johnson to make it more of a tragedy than anything. We'll talk about how it's actually pulled off. But this concept, I actually really like.
Yeah, I do too. You got to give him something that's going to last. And I think that he can keep going back to the wife that he loved, that he lost. I think is something that it's an easy Easter that you could just keep reopening that egg whenever you have to. But I was not expecting that this entire thing was just going to open with just a happy couple montage.
Yeah.
Like I'm looking going, did this thing just start in the middle of some different program?
Yeah, right.
It's like the montage in the Naked Gun movies.
Yes. Yes. And it's not short. I mean, this thing's like 7 minutes.
Yeah.
No, but it's also like oftentimes a lot of superheroes, almost all of them have a tragic backstory of some kind. And when you have a character who's not an archetypical superhero, it makes sense to give him a tragic origin to kind of give him something to cling on to. And I do like that his wife died because he literally was not strong enough to rescue her from a burning car. And he gets imbued with power that would have given him that, but at the cost of it being uncontrollable. So I like that even when he gets what would have helped him, it's more of a curse than you would have expected, than he would have wanted.
For sure.
And that's exactly it. What would have saved his wife is the curse that he's now burdened with the rest of his life. That's Shakespearean when you look at it from that 10,000 foot view.
Yeah. Kenneth Johnson, much like Tim Burton, which you guys always point out, not a big fan of these comics. So he wanted to make it more of a tragic story. And yeah, that's very Shakespearean. The monkey's paw, right? Of getting exactly what you wanted, being the curse that's going to eventually be your downfall.
It's also very, you know, if you're looking at Universal, that's very Dracula-ish.
Oh yeah, good point.
Where like, yeah, you're immortal, but there's a cost to immortality.
Mm-hmm. And you never see a sunrise, yeah.
Yep. I mean, that led to Morbius being created of all things, which we'll talk about in 30 years. Hopefully never. Hopefully I'm dead. Hopefully we're all dead by the time we actually get to that point of this. So, you know, it's almost a year later. We're introduced to Dr. Marks, who is his research partner at the Culver Institute, which is really, he needs an occupation. He's a scientist. That's from the comics. But I like that he's also working to, like, I love that the Hulk, specifically Banner, before he gets imbued with power, does not go to a therapist. Like, he literally goes to the extreme.
Yeah, I love this freaking office, too. The fact that the periodic table's on, like, a whole fucking wall. And levels are indicated by pieces of masking tape. All of this stuff, so 70s. But, yeah, it works for what we're doing here. And, of course, Banner doesn't bring a whole thing of donuts. Turn to bring them, and he only brings one. I would be pissed.
Depends who you're working with.
Yeah, true.
So they're interviewing subjects, trying to, you know, sort of help him process his grief in a lot of ways, but it's also research. So they're interviewing this person, and he talks about, it was literally the exact same car crash, but the woman they're talking to was able to lift the car, and that kind of, I don't want to say puts David Banner in more of a slump, but it leads him to the idea of, well, when you're in a moment of crisis, there is such a thing as adrenaline, just like giving you that extra oomph, pushing you beyond physical capabilities. And it leads to the whole thing of like, well, why couldn't I do that?
And that kid being there is not much help, because he's egging him on. He's just like, yeah, she was able to just lift the car like it was not. And I'm like, oh my God. And you're seeing, I'm surprised David Banner didn't turn to Hulk right then before the gamma radiation hit him. Like, he is pissed and he is like, oh, why couldn't I do that? Yeah, it's setting up the guilt. It's setting up what he's going to be, as you guys mentioned, cursed with later on.
It's also like good foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. If you... I like the idea of Bruce Banner having mental issues before he turns into the Hulk.
Yep.
That manifestation, it's literally, you know, his id, you know, because the Hulk is, you know, it took a long time, but they really made him complex. And there was a time where the Hulk finally went from being a mute brute to could speak fluent English. Much like Superman, the Hulk was finally able to evolve after a long time.
Yeah, he was able to talk in the comics, and that was a big bit of contention between Stan Lee and Kenneth Johnson as well. But Johnson had it right, I think, in that once Hulk is Hulk, you can't reason with him. Unless you go for the soul sometimes, as we'll see at the end of this pilot that we're talking about. But yeah, I think that was a good decision to not have him talk. To hear Lou Ferrigno or anybody doing the dub saying Hulk smash would make this more of a parody than an actual serious television show.
So we're also introduced to Jack McGee, who is a reporter for the National Register, which might as well be the National Enquirer, for all things considered, because he's also interested in the research, and he openly asks David for an interview. David tells him no, because he's a tabloid reporter. He's what Eddie Brock would become.
Yes.
When he finally got introduced. And my understanding is that this character, like, runs throughout the show.
Yes. Yeah, he's the one who kind of sticks his nose in everything and is on the cusp of discovering Hulk, discovering the actual secret that Banner's holding. And there's always instances where it just doesn't happen. And towards the end of the series run, he actually becomes very sympathetic. He kind of gets involved in a good way with David Banner later on. But yeah, here he's kind of the antagonist. He's the running antagonist of the entire show. But Matt, did you recognize him? We've covered him in a past life.
Oh, this actor?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. This is... I mean, look, I know this is the thing he's most well known for to a lot of people, but Child's Play.
Yes, yes, we covered him when we did Child's Play.
And ironically, another superhero show before this, kind of Bionic Woman.
Yes, which Kenneth Johnson also did, so there's that connection.
So I kind of like, if I'm looking at this for the sake of comparing this to, like, dramatic television, I do like that because you can't have the Hulk just fighting, you know, other monsters, because this could very easily be just Power Rangers for adults. I like that the thorn in his side is a reporter.
Yeah.
At a time where people were very distrustful of things that the media were saying.
Yeah, 10, 15 years later, it would be much worse, but they were already very distrustful. And let's not forget, Watergate was very, what was that? It was right before this. So, yeah.
In the 70s. Yep. And you also had, like, Vietnam,
yep,
where people were not, you know, they were much more open to propaganda. And this is kind of this is the Les Mis connection, because he's like the Inspector Javert
of
this movie, except he doesn't sing, which, you know, if he was played by Russell Crowe, would be all the better. But it's just funny that, you know, I understand now you've given me the background that he's a prominent part of the show. Never use him in the movies.
No, I think he shows up in one of the future TV movies, but yeah, he kind of disappears probably about midway through the fourth season. You kind of don't see him anymore.
Because that's one of the things that I also never really liked about the Hulk, is never cared about his rogues gallery.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and a lot of those you could not do on a show like this. You couldn't do Leader, you couldn't do Abomination.
No.
It'd be very hard to do. And but again, that's also one of the reasons why I never liked the Hulk. I like villains for the hero to fight. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, none of these characters appeal to me. And on the show, you know, I looked through when I was like 10, 11, and I'm like, oh, he doesn't... The one clip I saw was him throwing a bear across the woods.
Oh,
like,
my God.
This is stupid.
Oh, my God. It was the very next episode that he did that. There is an episode, I think it's towards the end of the second season, maybe the beginning of the third season, around then, where he does fight another Hulk. Like, there's another scientist who they have a back and forth in tete-a-tete. And that is a really, like, I remember loving that episode. I remember watching it with my dad very vividly. When I revisited it, I watched it, and it just brought back memories. movies, and that is pretty funny. Like, there's another scientist developing a similar set of gamma radiation, and they fight it out. But that's like literally the only time when he fights somebody who is close to being as super as he is. You know, there's a lot of episodes of him, you know, jumping out of a helicopter and waking up in a bush that he landed in, stuff like that. As far as the Rogues Gallery, you're right. If you're coming in for comic book villains and Hulk villains, you're not going to see him here.
Yeah, because it's also antithetical to Batman. You watched the Adam West show for the villains for a lot of reasons. Like, they were oftentimes the big draw. And, you know, Hulk, it's hard to do that. But having an antagonist as a reporter, a guy who can't physically fight the Hulk, but...
expose him.
Yeah, you know, expose him. You know, it's kind of playing off the Daily Bugle for Spider-Man.
Good call.
You know, he's kind of J. Jonah Jameson for David Banner, at least in this version. So David and Elena, they're interviewing subjects, and they start studying blood samples, and they realize that all of them have a certain DNA structure that allowed them to do that. And David's like, great, it's out. But he does a comparative blood test, and he does have it, but it's at a higher level than everyone else. So again, they're kind of setting this up to be almost like a mystery procedural.
Yeah.
And much like a lot of us, he decides to stay late at work trying to solve a particular case. And by accident, he realizes that each of the subjects, there was a sunspot activity. In his case, there wasn't any. And in sunspots, there is gamma rays that are emitted, which interfere with biological activity. Now, gamma radiation, that is to the Hulk's origin what Crime Alley is to Batman's. Like, that's in every version. So they kept that. And he's so anxious to, you know, tell Elena, but he doesn't want to wait till the morning. So he does what any sane scientist would do, goes into the radiology department and just exposes himself to gamma radiation with no protection.
Yeah.
He doesn't even do that thing to the dentist when you get x-rays, that bib. Nothing.
8 years before Jeff Goldblum did the same thing and had similar results. This was kind of funny to see, you know, but this whole thing of him being in this instrument and rotating around, this was the kickoff to the series. This was the opening credits. And it was kind of funny to see it all play out the way I remember seeing it in the credits way back when.
Everything that's done here feels like it's set up for what the series is going to be later on. Because from a scientist, this makes you one of the worst scientists that exist. No company is going to keep you on staff if you're doing this kind of shit, because they would lose their footing everywhere. But all of this stuff, I want to hit fast forward at this point. This thing needs to move. It is so just, I'm like, get on with it. And I know it's a setup. I know it's a pilot, but this thing feels like the Hulk is trudging through mud outside and just moving. I would yell at Lou Ferrigno to hurry up and get here if he could hear me. Like, just move it along.
Yeah, when I was 6 years old, there would be no way I could stomach this stuff. Now, a guy in my 40s, I can kind of go with this a little bit more. I like the drama being built, but you're right. When I was a kid, bring me Lou. You know, I want Lou now. I don't want to see him eventually get angry enough to turn into him.
I think that's the reason why the Hulk has never been a character who sold particularly well, especially to kids, because even in the comics, you have to have a lot of Bruce Banner. It can't just be the Hulk fighting people. So I think that's also why it's kind of, you know, because Bruce Banner's not as interesting as Peter Parker or, you know, some of the other alter egos, because Peter Parker's a teenager, you get that youthful perspective from readers. Bruce Banner, you don't really have that if you're a six-year-old kid. It's like Godzilla. You want to see Godzilla fight people? Fuck the humans.
I mean, nobody wants Dr. Jekyll. They want Mr. Hyde. That's Universal. They still haven't cracked that one. Okay, ask Russell Crowe. Again, go back to him. But the one thing, though, and it's, I almost fell off my couch laughing, is he's turning up all these knobs to do it all. Did they really put a piece of tape that says he's going to turn this up to 1 million times?
Yep.
Like, I'm like, suddenly I'm watching This is Spinal Tap, and I can't fucking... It was just, oh, that's great. It is unintentionally hilarious.
That definitely cracked me up. Like, this looks like the control room on the Death Star, where there's just a bunch of knobs and switches that Han doesn't know how to work. I'm like, what do these do exactly? Because clearly this had a purpose that is not intended for what he's doing, because he's subjecting himself to gamma radiation far beyond what other people have been exposed to in those circumstances. And the iconography of how this is shot with the chair, I mean, this was so popular, they use it to open the Ed Norton movie.
Yeah.
It looks they changed like, some stuff, but the shots and even the chair itself, you know, it's right out of this.
It's right out of the queue. What is it? Enter into Inner Space, like at Disney, the freaking queue that they had in the 60s and early 70s. Like, this is that same chair looking into a microscope type of thing. So it's a great look. It's just getting here is like, but yeah, it looks awesome when he's in that chair, when it's moving around, the camera work also following it looks pretty damn sweet.
So I think this is actually, you guys were complaining, Adam more so was complaining about the pacing. For the sake of dramatic television, I like that he doesn't turn into the Hulk right here. I like that they make you wait for it a little bit more. Because you would think by all logic he would transform right there, but he doesn't. It's just he takes the output and he doesn't die. He doesn't turn green. He just looks normal as usual. And he does what we all do when we fuck up at work. Screw you guys, I'm going home. And speaking of things that, you know, would set you off, he gets a... I love how he turns into the Hulk because of a flat tire. That cracked me up so much.
Well...
And, of course, it's a giant thunderstorm.
Mm-hmm. Very Frankenstein.
Like, it is as... Yeah, it, you know, this is, might as well... He might as well yell, when he reinflates the tire, it's alive.
Yeah, for sure. Kenneth Johnson's definitely playing with the Frankenstein imagery with the lightning and thunder. And, hell, who hasn't wanted to Hulk out after fucking getting a flat tire? So I like the fact that Kenneth Johnson made it a flat tire. You're right. Once he gets shot with the radiation, that's not when he's going to change. No normal person going to work every day is sitting in a fucking chair full of radiation. But a normal person coming home from work might get a flat tire on the way home, and this is exactly what you'd want to do.
And that's why I do think it's important that we saw the time with his wife earlier on, that we saw the tire, the blowout, and all that, because it just, it all reinforces itself here. And as much as I... You know, I'm rolling my eyes a bit, but it makes perfect sense, especially, God, almost 50 years ago at this point. You know, this is exactly what it would take for me to Hulk out on the side of a road, because even though I have it, I refuse to call AAA for a flat tire like this. Yeah, I would do the same thing.
And this transformation scared the living shit out of me as a kid. It was frightening seeing his eyes go white, see the shirt just rip from his back, and of course seeing the Hulk rise up. This was scary to me. This was probably my gateway into horror.
Yeah, and they couldn't, they obviously didn't have the budget to do something like American Werewolf in London, you know, nothing that extensive, but through the magic of editing and casting a giant guy,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, this is pre-CGI, so it's practical, and for the time, I could totally, I would not have had, if I was a kid, I would not have had that, oh, Hulk's not big enough approach mm-hmm. that some people might have nowadays. Like, I think for the time, this is as good as you could have done.
Although, even at the time, when I was a kid, I looked at it and I was like, man, his hair looks weird. They never got the Hulk's hair right in this. And here it's worse than ever. It's like a fright wig that you buy at any corner store. And I'm like, oh, that's bad.
Yep. So once he turns into the Hulk, he destroys the car and rolls it into a ditch. And the car blows up. And he's so mad, he just runs off into the night. And I love that he wakes up. It's like when you wake up after a night of binge drinking and you just have no clue what you are. That's immediately where my brain went.
That's, yep, that was my thought too.
You know, and this is very Wolfman-esque. You know, when he changes back, he has no clue what happened. Like, he has no memory of it. But speaking of Frankenstein, he meets a girl and her father fishing at a lake. And I'm sitting here going, oh no, something bad's going to happen. He's still at the Hulk at this point. That's very Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. Never having seen this, I could not believe, not that this is an homage, that this is a direct rip from Frankenstein. Like, I cannot believe that they go this route.
You know what, though? I can, and I like it. I like the fact that he's interacting with other people. And this is totally Frankenstein, girl by the lake. I'm not going to deny the way it's just ripping it off, I guess you can say. But hey, you know what? I think for the dramatic tension of interacting, I think it works.
No, it does. And back then, I probably would have been more forgiving about it, but I've had a lot of Frankenstein lately. It seems like yes. This year of my life. So I'm just like, obviously it's there, but he's also green. I mean, they do everything. Luckily, he doesn't have bolts in his neck or Universal could sue. I mean, this is that close. But it also cracks me up because this lake is right there enough that they could walk into it. But by the end of the scene, they throw off a cliff into that same lake.
Yes.
And, you know, the girl falls into the lake, and I'm thinking, oh, she's going to drown like in Frankenstein, but he pushes the tree for her to grab onto, mm-hmm. the dad shooting at him. And so this has also been a problem I had with the Hulk as a reader, is like, how can you hurt him? And part of this is because it's a guy. I like that you can shoot him and he gets hurt because he takes a bullet to the shoulder, but he still crushes the rifle with his bare hands and freaking throws the dad into the lake.
Yes, I love that.
And then he just kind of goes back into the forest and he sees his reflection, and that kind of causes him to change back. I don't understand the psychology of that, but I guess the Hulk, in the context of this pilot, when his adrenaline goes down, he changes back. But I'm like, by that same token, it took him a long ass time to calm down.
Yeah, right.
That's like me after a Jet game.
The whole day wasn't going to go there.
Sweep up the glass, buy a new TV. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the come down is pretty similar. So we cut to Elena showing back up at work, and David shows up just half naked and bleeding. And he's telling her, you know, I can't remember anything. I remember changing the tire. That was it.
Guys, that this does is not work when you come up. Home this way.
Yeah. This is what you have to say to your spouse after a long night with the boys.
Yeah, that looks like a little more happened than just a tire going out there, sir.
So all he says is he remembers he feels really strong, and he remembers the white eyes in the stream. And she notices that his bullet wound is almost completely healed, which this is the thing of the Hulk. The Hulk pretty much can't be killed, which is hysterical given one of the titles of this of these movies. Mm-hmm. But in the comics, it's like whatever you use to try to hurt him, like, no longer works. He's incredibly adaptable. And you're seeing that here where he takes a bullet and it just heals. Apparently, and he says that he took like 7 times the dosage, which they're trying to figure out what's happening. And Jack shows up again. He will not be denied his interview, but Elena's the one to tell him away this time. But he notices David looking a little worse for wear, and that kind of makes him a little bit skeptical.
Guys, did you know Elena's eventual happenstance, what happens to her? Did you guys know about that ahead? And did you guys
know this? I had no clue. Okay. But given that I know the Hulk isn't with many women, I had an idea.
Yeah. Because I was thinking, you know, in watching this, I was like, there's no way they would kill 2 women in his life, and that's exactly what they do. And in the show, this happens at least 1 other time that I can think of, maybe 2. So they play with this a lot.
Yeah, the one thing I know about the show, he gets laid a lot.
Yes, he does.
Bruce, well, sorry, David, but Banner is kind of like, yeah, this Banner is kind of like Matt Murdock in that he fucks a lot.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've never seen hardly anything of the show, but I know that he beds a lot of women because he travels from town to town because he can't stay in one place. So they move to the Southwest Lab. This institute just has laboratories everywhere, apparently. So they have enough funding to have all this equipment, but they can't get better wallpaper. They find a chamber that they use for like deep sea, and she realizes that you got to do some experiments, so she puts them in the chamber. And they're like, okay, more research is needed. This reminds me very much of, we'll talk about this very soon too. This kind of reminds me of like the Fantastic Four, where it's a lot of just self-experimentation.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And they try, and they're also trying to do like Frankenstein, you know, recreate the experiment or what happened, but you know, he can't do it. And he goes home to sleep. And much like the opening of this movie, he has another nightmare of his wife's death. Does this happen a lot in the show where he'll like dream about his dead wife?
Mostly for this pilot. It doesn't really happen after this. As you guys mentioned, he gets laid a lot. So this is the epitome of his grief about his wife. But he does grieve a lot about Elena later on. And he will mention, oh, I was married before and that kind of thing. But it's not a big part of the show, although you know what's going on internally, especially given the last shot of this pilot.
Elaine is startled by like a thing in his brain activity. She goes to the chamber and you get the giant green fist that smashes through the window.
Nice shot.
No, I like that too. I like that, you know, it's kind of like Jaws where you don't see. Now that you've seen the transformation, now we're going to hint at it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the Hulk should be foreboding. You shouldn't want to see the Hulk. You do because you want to see what happens, but you don't putting yourself in that room. Like, you don't want to be around him. Also, much like me watching Jet games. So the Hulk rips through the door, and, you know, they're also showing that even with the budget, like, he rips the steel wall. So they're creative with showing how strong he is with what they have.
Yeah, and given in the comics, and future movies will play with this, but the angrier he gets, the bigger he gets, right? They can't do that with Lou. Lou is a very, very large man. But you can't do that with a human in 70. So I like the fact that they're showing just how angry he can get without actually doing that physical transformation that we'll see later on.
Now, and much like, you know, the Wolfman in Frankenstein doesn't outright attack her. She kind of talks him down a little bit. She manages to get some blood off his hand, and he changes back.
This, I cannot believe how much I'm watching this, and I say to myself, the sun's getting real low there, big guy. It's time to start, like, this is Black Widow.
Oh my God, you're right.
Hulk. Like, it's the exact same thing. I mean, a good woman's going to calm a man down and calm down that rage, and we're okay. You could stop breaking things now.
And they realize that, okay, clearly it's triggered by emotion, most likely anger. because he's losing, much like the Wolfman, he loses all intellect and, you know, emotional control. And she says that, no, it's your, I was surprised by this, that they're openly saying, you know, this is part of your psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. It's a part of you. And it's not killing people because you don't have a history of, you're not a death row killer. And they're stopped once, God, people could just show up at this place. Like, they don't have a secretary apparently letting people in at the door, because a cop shows up and they tell him that we found your car, which is amazing because it fucking blew up. they ask him why it wasn't reported. And he says, you know, McGee's still there and he's got the cast of the footprint that was found.
What foot is this? Like, Shaquille O'Neal, to go back to freaking Steel, would look at that and go, damn, that's a big foot. Yeah, like, right. We see the Hulk's foot. We see his footprints multiple times. That's not the same foot.
No.
I think I've seen that outside the cast of the Matterhorn at Disneyland.
And McGee's saying that, you know, he talked to the father and daughter and they ran into a big Hulk. I hate when we have to find a way to contrive how they get the name. They snuck it in. This made me roll my eyes. I hate to sound like that guy, but this got on my nerves.
Yeah, it kind of got on mine too. They have to contrive a way. This is a reporter. He would be the one to come up with this. I kind of go with that, but it's contrived. I'll agree with you. Like, she's the one who says incredible. Yeah. That's the funny thing. She's the one who says incredible, yeah. And he adds that. That's the part that gets me.
Nobody talks that way. Like, it's not the type of verbiage that people would use.
No, Hulk is not a common noun to describe a bodybuilder.
Right.
They would say, like, this green alien or something. They get asked, like, do you know anything about this? They say no. And Elena says that the creature didn't harm either of them, although if you were there, he kind of did, technically.
Yeah, he kind of did.
Yeah, he threw him into the water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're kind of, like, trying to talk out that, okay, they're setting up that the Hulk, despite being, like, chaotic neutral, doesn't outright go after innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he won't intentionally maim or kill someone, and he went after him because he shot him.
Yeah, exactly.
McGee tries to tell them, you know, let me in, but she's like, nope, you're not. Housekeeping? Nope, not coming in. He goes back to his car for a stakeout. I mean, I'll give the guy this. He's more consistent than Vicki Vale and Batman.
Always sticking it to Vicki Vale.
I was thinking of Knox in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah. Good comparison.
They go back to the main building trying X-ray therapy, but it doesn't work. McGee manages to sneak into the lab and he finds the, you know, demolished chamber. And to his surprise, he finds a footprint that is exactly the same. So his suspicions are being confirmed and he overhears them talking about packing up and finding a place to hide, because clearly there's going to be suspicions. David tries to go to the closet. He finds McGee in the closet.
Yes.
And he's knocked over all these chemicals which are leaking. So now I'm thinking, okay, fire's going to get started. The Hulk's going to come out. Didn't go that way. Instead, they do what anyone should do, threaten to call the cops for trespassing. But because he's a good reporter, he calls their bluff. He said, look, I heard you talking about covering up a damaged lab.
Yeah, there's some good logic.
At an impasse. Yeah, and we get the line. I didn't realize it was in the pilot.
Yep.
The don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
I love how Bill Bixby delivers this line. It's just one of those things where you can tell the reserve nature of what he's saying, but at the same time, he definitely means what he's saying. And I like the fact that Jack McGee's the one who is the recipient of it, and this is something that will live with him throughout the course of the series. So yeah, I like this scene quite a bit, actually.
And all the things that have become over the years and decades that have become synonymous with Hulk, this line is one of them. And it's from this. It's not from the comic. It's not from Stan. It's not from Jack. It's not from it. It's from this. And it's amazing that this is, I think, is important to the Hulk mythos as its color. It matters. And I think it's delivered amazingly well. And yeah, I didn't realize it was in the pilot. It's that moment where you're just like, oh, shit. I don't think Bixby's great, but he delivers this really well.
Let me ask the question then, Garrett, because you've watched the show. Does he get better as the show goes on?
He pretty much plays it the same as the show goes on. You're living off the affable nature of Bill Bixby's past life as somebody in all the TV shows that he came from before this. I'll answer it very easily. No, he doesn't. But again, he's so likable to me that I have no choice but to go with it. You know, as the show goes on, he does direct episodes. He will direct future movies in this retrospective. So he's more than just an actor, thank goodness. But yeah, this doesn't get much better.
Well, speaking of not getting better, I got the swerve because these chemicals do indeed cause a fire, because there is a giant pile labeled danger. just sitting there.
Yes.
That's so you might as well just have explosive written right on there.
It might as well be that big black bomb with the fuse. And, you know, I appreciate that the show, you know, this pilot is really trying to play as dramatic television, but there's some inherently goofy stuff that sticks out.
For sure.
David tries to get inside the building because Elena's knocked out. He's getting tested. You know, he couldn't save his wife and he can't, you know, he can't get her out, but he does change into the Hulk, which McGee doesn't see that, but he does see him grab her and leave.
And leave, yeah. Very Frankenstein-esque.
Yep, but he's broke his leg, and all he can do is watch the lab go down in flames, which is also a great symbolism for the box office returns of the Ang Lee movie after its first weekend.
Already taking shots at that movie.
I'm just talking about the second weekend. I'm not talking about the quality of the movie because I have a lot to say. And again, because my knowledge is more inferred by the movies, like when they go into the woods and he sets her on the ground. So it reminds me of that scene where the Hulk grabs Liv Tyler in that like cave.
Yeah, but the tragedy of this is the fact that it's not David Banner who witnesses her death. It's the Hulk.
Yep.
And I love that tragedy. I like how that's played here. I even like how Lou plays this. You know, Lou's the presence. Lou is the monster. Lou is not called on to act very much. But here, I think he does a good job of just looking at this chick, seeing that she dies. And then when David Banner transforms, he's not the one who's aware of it. I find that very well done.
No, I didn't think of it that way and that handedly. And that's actually an amazing point. I mean, imagine your alter ego going through it and you, the thoughtful person that understands his emotions, doesn't have that to reconcile. That's actually really good.
You know, she realizes she's dying and she says, "I loved you for a long time." And then she died. I knew she was going to die. I'm surprised it happened in this manner. Mm-hmm. And seeing the Hulk cry was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Not saying it's bad. It just kind of threw me for a loop. And then we cut to, now I knew this, that he was believed to be dead, which is why he travels so much for the show. And nobody believes Jack's story because he's at the funeral, but he's saying that this Hulk caused their deaths. I love how they put a warrant out for arresting the Hulk.
Yeah, this big green thing. Yeah, go after.
Yeah,
this.
Like what is a cop gonna do? What is a police squad gonna do against this thing? Which is also the problem with the Hulk. Like when you need to take the Hulk down, you call the Avengers.
Yeah.
Which again, one of my problems with the Punisher, I never believed him being able to fight the Hulk. I don't care what equipment he has. So everyone's left, and you see David go to his, what people believe to be his actual grave, remembering her words, and he says that, you know, "I love you," and that's basically it. He walks away, and it ends on this somber note, literally, because they play that music that everybody knows.
Yep, the Lonely Man theme. This is played at the end of every single episode, and I gotta tell you guys, it gives me a chill every time. This is played as David Banner walking with that small bag that he has from town to town is walking away from yet another tragedy. So yeah, this really gets to me every time this music is played.
Yeah. I mean, that music is synonymous with the Hulk in general. I mean, even outside of the show, there's just something about loss and desperation of walking away. Look, Family Guy used it in a clip with Stewie walking down a road carrying a knapsack, and it still emotionally hits. I don't take it as a joke. So this is one of those pieces of music that kind of transcends, and it's amazing how just pitch perfect it is for this kind of moment.
Well, speaking of Family Guy, they literally parody the opening credits where it's Stewie changing the tire and he turns into a green Peter.
Yes.
I'll just say Garrett that. It's actually pretty funny. But that's how the show, that's how the pilot ends. I mean, it definitely hooks you for, if you like it, you know, it makes you want to watch where do you go from here, because now he's being hunted by law enforcement and a reporter, and he's got nothing left here. So that is, as an origin story, that's how they chose to depict it. So on a scale of 1 to 10, Garrett, what do you give the Incredible Hulk episode 1 and 2?
I will freely admit that I bring a lot of nostalgia to this set of movies. All four of these movies, before we get to Ang Lee's Hulk, they were all watched under circumstances that I remember each and every time. And revisiting this as somebody who is trying to review it as a reviewer on this podcast, it was tough to put that aside. But I can recognize the faults here. I can recognize the slowness of 70s TV. I can recognize how having Lou as this Incredible Hulk is both an asset and a deterrent of the show, because that's what you're waiting for, right? And the whole thing of the TV show is him trying to, and we'll discuss this with future movies, but him trying to get rid of that. You don't want him to be rid of it. We want to see him Hulk out. as far as this origin story goes, I think it's a wonderful setup. I think Kenneth Johnson's thing of putting it in Shakespearean terms works very, very well for the tragedy behind it. Now, was it worth seeing two women, not just one, die in this show to make David Banner who he is? Probably not. I would have probably done without the opening montage of this TV show and just made it about him and Elena. And I think that would work just as well. But at the same time, I think it's good. I think seeing Jack McGee get involved was good. I liked seeing the back and forth between Bixby and Jack Colvin in this. I find it to be a great setup. However, the lack of resolution is also a big thing with me, and I know this was setting it up for that resolution, which by the end of season 5 still doesn't happen, which is why we get TV movies. But I liked revisiting it. I can recognize that people coming in not being that into 70s TV could be bored to tears. And there are parts that are kind of slow, but it's enjoyable enough, and if you like The Incredible Hulk as a character, if you like Hulk, if you like Mark Ruffalo as his character, if you like Ed Norton's Incredible Hulk, which plays a lot off of what's done here, then I think you should give it a look. Do I recommend that you check out the entire series? No. There are plenty of bad episodes in that TV show. There's one episode, well, I'll save that for a future show. But yeah, this is, as a reviewer, as somebody looking at it critically, I can give it a solid 6. It's good enough to set up what's coming next, but it's not something that, say, my brother would probably sit through. I think he would be bored within 20 minutes. But this is a solid 6 for me. It's worth visiting.
Adam, do you share that sentiment, or are you going to Hulk smash this this review to pieces?
For being someone younger than Garrett, but not quite as young as Matt, this was in the age range that I should have been watching when I was young. And I did a little bit, but was never massively into it. Never massively into the Hulk. I mean, shoot, I'll read Old Man Logan and okay, yeah, the Hulk's in that too. I'll read World War Hulk and I'm like, yeah, whatever. So this, I mean, it's footprint, it's abomination sized footprint in culture can't be understated because it was massive. It was a huge hit. It changed a lot of things. This pilot is not great, but it does do what it needs to do. It introduces you to the character. It sets the rules for the universe. It gives you the characters that are going to cross over. It gives you your antagonist that you could bring in and out. And that's kind of all that it does. And based on that, it runs a little slow. It runs a little long. It repeats itself by killing multiple women inside of it as a TV movie. But if you look at it as 2 episodes, I guess you could stretch it that way. It's okay. It's fine. I don't love Bill Bixby. I feel like he's a 80s sitcom dad playing here in a 70s TV show. Put him on Step by Step and he kind of, you know, would fit in. So I think the show is okay, this version of it. I do like that personal drama feel. I do think is important to the Hulk, and I think it nails that. But the rest of it, I mean, look, I got to say, 1977, we had Wonder Woman. 1978, we had Superman the movie. We had Star Trek, you know, going on at this time. So this just feels lesser. And I understand it really kicked off network TV show, and it did it in a big way that it kept around for 5 years, and that's amazing at that time. But for what it is, it's fine. You know, it does okay. I can't say it does any better than fine, and I'm going to give it a fine score based on that. It's a 5. If you want to complete your Hulk watching, great. If you want to find one of the things that's good about the show, you got to start here. I think it's worth watching for that. But outside of it, it doesn't work as a movie. It barely works as a pilot just because it runs itself a little long, but it's a 5 on 10. Like the Hulk and my feelings on the Incredible Hulk, it's fine.
I will say, going into this, I tried to be as optimistic as I could because I knew that this show led to something that was very popular and informed a lot of the other media for this character. And I thought it was passable, but I just have a hard time getting overly invested in the Hulk as a character, with a couple of exceptions. And I think because this movie follows a lot of the beats that are recognizable with how he's depicted most of the time, there weren't a lot of things that threw me for a surprise outside of his wife dying and, of course, his partner dying. So apparently, like, if you're a woman, just stay away from Bruce Banner because, like, nothing good will come from it.
David
Bruce Banner. DB. I'll just call him Hulk. But the world population must go down because he's like walking death for women, apparently. But as something that is network television, it would definitely procure my interest to watch. But I'm also not the biggest fan of the character, so I can't say individually if I would have been someone who watched this every week. But I think it's fine for what it is. I don't think it's bad. But I also don't think even judging it based on network television, as a pilot movie, it's not quite cinematic enough in that way, but I'm also not going to be too harsh on it. So I'm going to give it a 6. Yeah, I'm going to land on a 6. That's my final answer, Doctor. So that's the pilot. And as we mentioned, the show ran for 5 seasons, but the movies didn't come until, or the movies didn't come until after the show was canceled.
Yeah, officially, the second episode was also a movie, but I'm not going to have you guys watch that.
We're jumping 11 years after this pilot.
Yeah.
So 6 years after the show ended, we get The Incredible Hulk Returns, which is also worth noting because it is the first live-action debut for Thor.
Yes.
We're getting into the draw of 2 of these movies. We are getting Hulk and Daredevil before we actually talk about them properly.
Yeah, Thor and Daredevil. Yeah, that was an interesting thing in revisiting this years later when Marvel was running proper, and I had completely forgotten that both Thor and Daredevil had made appearances in the Hulk TV movies. But yeah, we'll talk about those.
So having, you know, seen the pilot and not watching much of the show, Adam, does the idea of watching this and adding the God of Thunder appeal to you at all?
Nope. as I did not think they would be able to do it in a way that would be better than Adventures in Babysitting. That was kind of my level. And I had no idea. Google it, people. Come on. The Kingpin is Thor. I had no idea that these movies were done after the series. I figured that maybe they ended every season with a movie. And I had no idea that we were going to add characters in it Avengers style until I started watching and I saw the cast list. But I'll say, I had one of my children sit down for the last third of next week's movie, and she could not help but just go, oh my God, is that what the... So, yeah, we got stories, but I wasn't interested to start, but it found a way to at least keep me watching.
Yeah, I've seen the trial of The Incredible Hulk because I like Daredevil much more than I do the Hulk. And certainly I like Daredevil much more than I like Thor. If you thought I was kind of critical about the Hulk as a character, outside of one story, I have never given a shit about Thor as a solo character. Same. So even adding him to the Hulk in this context does not excite me whatsoever. And I'm terrified of how they're going to handle not just the costume, but are they going to give him the, you know, Shakespearean type of way he speaks, you know, the more heightened dialogue, or are they just going to have him talk like a surfer bro? I'm terrified, but I'm also very curious. So at least I have morbid curiosity to look forward to on The Incredible Hulk Returns.
Like I said, I've
seen Trial and I have not seen Death.
I cannot wait for next week's podcast, if that's your thoughts going in, and that's all I'll say. Next week's movie was these next few movies were appointment television for me. I remember seeing ads for all of them and being super stoked at them actually airing because I was starved for more Hulk, and these next few were all appointment television.
Well, much like syndicated television, you'll have to tune in next week to find out our thoughts on The Incredible Hulk Returns. So until next week, my mother always used to tell me, getting angry doesn't help. Your podcast. Thank you, gentlemen.
That I'm dead. But they also think that this creature inside of me is a murderer, and they may someday be right. It's not human. Maybe it's what we were before we became human. Maybe it's the worst in us.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Do you really believe that I am separate from you?
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
mean, my mother always used to tell me getting angry doesn't help.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Mission Impossible film series, the Jaws franchise, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, Avatar, and so much more.
I feel somehow we're alike.
I guess we could all learn something from the big goof.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I made a stink bomb once. Cleared out the whole school. What a wonderful fiasco. The whole school. My friends kept my secret, but forevermore they called me Stinky. Stinky!
Scheduling done by Matt.
Look at him. He lives for every second. To hell with tomorrow. Not a worry in the world. The worry he leaves to me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
What is it that you pound on my door with such insolence?
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Security ought to be beefed up a lot more. In a place like this, you can't be too careful.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Are you ready?
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Where will you go?
The city.
That's not a good place. People get lost in that city.
You have to stop someplace.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production, copyright 2026, and any and all sound clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
You take my secret with you, and I leave mine with you. I have a brother in the world now. Yes, you do. My hand is in front of
you. I know.
You can leave us now.
All right, Mr. Goudreau, you ready?
Yep.
All right, we're going in three.
I'm checking the backup. Hang on.
Oh, yeah, please do. Oh, I didn't hit record. Thank you. Okay.
I'm going to have a checklist that I start.
Please do. Do something on this besides just sit there.
Do something. Besides just sit there. Did Laura give you notes?
When I was a kid, bring me Lou. You know, I want Lou now. I don't want to see him eventually get angry enough to turn into him.
Well, but I think that's laugh also because...
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that's the reason why... No, Hulk is not a common noun to describe a bodybuilder.
Right.
Especially one that's, they would say, like, this green alien or something.
Well, not till 6 years later. Never mind.
Is that E.T.?
That's a different lawsuit.
That's Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, they had to. There's a reason they paid Marvel Jesus. for yep. Hogan ripping his shirts.
Yep.
Oh God, that's right.
Yep.
Yep.
So you're saying that Jack McGee should have been like Pat Patterson
or Jimmy Hart? Yeah, probably.
Okay, yeah, Jimmy Hart's a better comparison. Mm-hmm. And they on a scale of 1 to 10. Garrett, what do you give The Incredible Hulk episode 1 and 2?
I hate when you go to me first. You're going to make me Hulk out on you, aren't you? Oh, wait, that was the Punisher series.
I've seen you get drunk and Hulk out.
I will freely admit